I'm going to better use you to help to bring people to me through this medium, which is acting that you love so much. And you'd be better served to represent them than to be in front of the screen. And that was very, very hard for me to take at the time. I'm not going to lie.
The Profile with Premier Christianity Magazine.
Hello, you're listening to The Profile here on Premier Christian Radio. I'm Sam Hales, editor of Premier Christianity Magazine that brings you this show. And I'm delighted to say that this week's guest is Femi Ogans, who is a former actor turned prominent agent who's left an indelible mark on the entertainment industry. He is the CEO of Identity School of Acting, which is a drama school based in London and LA and elsewhere. And Femi has represented John Boyega, Letitia Wright and other big name Hollywood stars through Identity Agency Group, as well as receiving an MBE and a UK Film Council Breakthrough Brit Award. Femi was also recognised at this year's Premier Gospel Awards for his special contribution to culture. He joins me right now. Femi Ogans, welcome to the show.
Hello, thanks very much for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. We always like to start at the beginning. So tell me, did you grow up in a Christian family?
Yeah, I did, yeah. So both members of the family, both parents are Christian, Roman Catholic and Church of England. So a nice little combination there.
And what was that like as a child and a teenager? Did faith sit comfortably from you from an early age, or did it have its ups and downs?
No, it's always sat quite comfortably. And it's just down to just a really nice, measured and balanced upbringing from both parents. Both my parents met in this country. They're both of Nigerian descent, but maybe it's the fact that my mum was born here that just helped to bring the beauty of both cultures together. And just in terms of how religion and faith was able to feed through that, it was a very seamless and open process for us growing up.
Tell me, what did church look like? Because obviously, with two parents from kind of different church backgrounds, where did you end up going as a child?
Well, I have to say that my mum won it. So it was a Roman Catholic church. So we became, myself and my brother, we were altar servers at a very, very, very young age, which I thought was pretty cool at the time, because I thought I was like a superhero character with the white gown or whatever it was. but it was quite a privileged position to be in, you know, way back in the early 1980s. So I'm giving my age away, just to be given that honour of walking up and down, even if you didn't know what you were doing. Just looking back at it, just knowing that you were able to be that kind of service to God was a wonderful thing. So no, it was nice, really nice, warm memories I get from that.
Yeah. And have you kind of continued in the Catholic Church since then, or is your faith look a bit different now?
No, it's quite different. And for me, I don't quite like to put a label on it, because for me, faith and my belief in God and Jesus, rather than it being too much about the religion, it's more about the relationship, as you've probably heard from so many people. So, yeah, for me, it's about subscribing to that. So titles, I'm not one to conform or ripple with it, yeah.
And tell me where the interest in acting came from. Was that also around in your early childhood?
It's funny, because I found myself saying this the other day, that because I really thought about where it was all born from. And it was memories of walking up and down Labrogrove Market with my dad in the 1980s, where it felt like everybody knew him. They'll be shouting, Abby, 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 Abby. And but that's such a wonderful, warm, short figure of a man, but a king in that, that it was just so warm and, you know, heartwarming to watch and experience. And if acting was a way of me being able to reach out, you know, to people and feel that warmth and also give that warmth, that was the next best thing. So I think that progressed into me doing the classic thing of performing at home, in front of my brothers and my sisters and my mum and my dad and whatever it is. And then it then took on a different life of itself.
Yeah. Now, we'll talk, obviously, about what you're doing now, which is representing a lot of this talent. But I understand they kind of came that moment where you switched from doing acting yourself to then wanting to represent others. And I understand that was a bit of a God moment. So do you want to just tell us kind of how that switch came about?
Yeah, it was an absolute God moment. I didn't see it coming. It just came out of nowhere. Pretty much, I was really at the highs of my actual career. My career was really progressing in a really, really nice way. I just played the lead alongside Helen Mirren at the time in Prime Suspect. And also, I'd done a film with Dustin Hoffman. So, like, it was going great. And everything that I worked up to, it was there. I was at that point there. But God whispered in my ears. And just looking back and realizing that I heard it and I accepted it, it's quite something to be able to accept. But also, you just take that encouragement from the fact that I was willing to listen. Where God said, Femi, I want to use you for something else. And I was like, what are we talking about here? And he said, no, I'm going to better use you to help to, bring people to me through this medium, which is acting that you love so much. And you'd be better served to represent them than to be in front of the screen. And that was very, very hard for me to take at the time. I'm not going to lie. Fame for me, well, it wasn't even fame, but my little, definition of what fame was back then, it was great. It felt great. It was, all the adulation, and all that upliftment that you're getting from human beings. And all of a sudden now you have to lean on to your spiritual side that you hadn't invested in as much as you could have done. But I listened to it and I haven't looked back since, it's just like a wave and I have a surfboard ready to ride it.
Amazing. And tell me more about what that means when you say, God spoke to me, God directed me, for someone who's, for someone who thinks that language is kind of new to them, what does that mean that God spoke? I mean, did you hear a voice? Like what does that look like?
I heard a voice, and that voice, because everyone's got their own takes on things. And sometimes, if we really listen closely, we'll realize that our conscience, sometimes that could be God that's speaking. And I honestly believe it is, because when I really listen to the purity of that voice, even though it might have my voice and, heading it, whatever it is, I know that it's coming from an absolute different source. Just to see how it materializes in its own way, that in itself made me, that was almost like a signature to say, what you heard and what you worked on and what you acted on is real. And that's how it came to me. It came to me with my voice speaking to me. But as I said, the essence was very, very, was too pure for me to take total ownership of it.
Yeah. And that's led to the Identity School of Acting. It's this drama school that seems to be growing. I mean, every time I look it up, it seems like it's in a new location. Tell me how, because you've built that from the ground up. So tell me early days, how do you go from a kind of word from God of you're going to start helping people in this industry, not so much being at the forefront yourself anymore in terms of acting and these shows, but you're going to be raising up other people. How does that go from being a dream to a reality?
For me, it's all about having that blind faith and, and that self-belief. I often say to people who ask me this question that, because it's so funny, you get two sets of people. You get those people that said, oh, how does this all happen? And you tell them how it all happened. It was God. And they're like, yeah, okay, cool. Yeah. But how else? And I'm like, well, you've asked me and I've told you what it is. And you don't want to accept that. So, okay, let me try and put some kind of worldly stamp on it, but you're going to be missing a great deal. But what I've come to realize with how God has worked in my life and what my faith belief is that God will give you a certain amount, but then he'll expect you to do the rest. That's what I strongly believe. I don't believe that God just hands it out to you and says, great, this is it. I'm going to bless you and I'm going to give you. He requires you to do some of that work too. And that's how it was. It was a marriage made in heaven whereby the investment, the blind faith that I had, the investment that he placed in me was what gave me the extra energy and extra upliftment that during those hard times to go, boom, I can do this. And just finding myself in all these different areas and regions of London, handing out flyers through all the different seasons that, that life presents, whether it be, hailstone or rain or snow or whatever it was. When you look back and you look at this wonderful book of your life and what you've done, you realize that you had to be working on faith there. And it had to be something else that was really helping to assist you to materialize what it was. And because I heard that voice and because I recognized that voice right from the beginning, maybe that's what also made me just continue to go. And I've always been that sort of person that I don't see anything but the goal at hand. I don't entertain any doubts. I think the moment you start to do so, that's when things don't materialize. But it's that blind faith, that blind belief that you can become whatever you want to become, as long as you've got that belief in God and you're willing to invest in it and celebrate it and not apologize for it, then God will give you all the ammunition, if that's the right term to use, to be able to overcome anything.
Now, it's called Identity, and it'd be great to hear about some of the kind of context behind this, which, as I understand it, when you were starting out, there was a significant problem in the industry when it came to diversity and representation in film and in TV. Can you just explain a bit about that for people who may not be aware, and how that led to you wanting to address that problem, really, by creating what these outlets that you've now created?
Well, it's a well-known documented fact in mainstream drama schools. It's somewhat improved since, because Identity has been going on for 21 years now, I'm proud to say. But it's a well-known documented fact that in mainstream drama schools, there's a very, very small percentage of actors from BME backgrounds. And for me, rather than join the chorus of complaints about it, as I said, for me, it was about doing something about it. And I've always been somebody that's been encouraged, but also motivated by pioneering and doing things that nobody else has done. And once you find that formula, it's about running as fast as you possibly can, that nobody can actually catch up. And that's what it was. I had to fit. I had to basically address an issue that was pressing. And I have to say, and sometimes when you're hearing it from a Nigerian palate, because I swear we're a different breed on ourselves, honestly. It's like, you know what I mean? Like, we think that we make everything on this earth, whatever it was. And our belief in ourselves is so, so high. But I have to say that it does take that certain character that you have to believe that, you know, when you read excerpts of the Bible, that, you know, you've been made in the image of God. We need to celebrate the fact that we are spiritual principles that are cocooned in this shell, this body that we're in. But that beautiful nature that we've got, the goodness that we exhibit, that's what I work with, and that's what I celebrate. And that's what I want to do with the drama school, which was to create a safe haven for actors from all different backgrounds to be able to find themselves, celebrate themselves, and elevate each other. And it's so funny because I know that you're probably going to ask me about the talent that I used to look after, or the talent that I do look after, like John Boyega, for example, in Star Wars. I remember I was in LA at the time, and we were parked on this on an open air car park on the roof, and I said to him, "Imagine this, John. We can be agents for Christ. Imagine that we can go into this dark world that we're about to embark on, this journey. And little does the devil know, but we're going to be recruiting people to Christ through the work that we do and the people that we have the fortune of being able to work with." So that's what, for me, validated the progression from creating a drama school to creating an agency. Where the drama school will nurture and develop the talent, and the agency will represent them. And you just hope that once you're able to give these wonderful, beautiful souls the opportunity to celebrate their talents that come from God, right, they will celebrate it in the right way. But I think it's very, very important that we have to understand that as individuals, you know, God has given us that freedom to make our own decisions. And that's what I do. With the job that I do as an agent is to present them with opportunities and hoping that through that nurturing, developing process, they will make the right decisions.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And I wanted to hear more about that in terms of your faith as an agent. Again, maybe for those who aren't even aware of what agents do, but I guess the way I put it to you is, how do you operate as an agent in yourself as Femi, because you are a Christian, because you're following Jesus? What does that look like practically in the way you do your job, in a way that might look different to the rest of the industry because of your own identity in Christ and because your faith is so important to you? How does that affect your day-to-day work as someone who runs an agency?
Well, you know, it affects me in a positive way and also a negative worldly way, which I'm not too concerned about. For anybody that does go onto my Instagram or my social media, they will see I'm unapologetic about my love for Christ. But also when I post, it has to come from the heart. So it's never a strategic positioning that I display, because I don't want to look back at it and say to myself, oh, I've done that, because it makes me look good in front of everybody. If anything, do you know what I mean? It has caused, you know, distaste in a lot of people, just in terms of, you know, their different faith beliefs or them wanting to have that separation. But also, it has affected the way that I manage my clients. So, not to suggest that, you know, you can, you know, brandish everybody with the same brush when it comes to agents and, you know, money grabbers or whatever it is. But I am I work with that real strong moral principle. That is aligned with my faith and belief in God, that if I feel and I see a client going in the wrong direction, and I've lost a lot of clients for this, I'll have to say something, you know? And that's something that I will continue to do so. So as many clients that want to end up leaving me because of, you know, the way I am or whatever it is, it's really up to them. But as long as I can, you know, rest my head on that pillow at night, knowing that money was not my God, and God is, I'm very, very happy. So, yeah.
And just, I'm obviously not asking you to name names or give specifics, but just to help people understand, when you say you see a client going in the wrong direction, like what does that mean? What are the pressures or the concerns or the traps that might come to an actor, and you as an agent are, I guess, trying to protect them or help them or lead them in the right way? What are the challenges that they're facing, and where are the areas where you feel kind of obligated to step in?
You know, fame is a very, very interesting word, and with it, it's got so many different qualities to it. But fame, if not handled the right way, it's almost like, you know what, you've got, you're in the palms of the devil, you know, and you have to be able to navigate in such a way whereby if you've been given a platform to be able to celebrate and to be able to influence the masses, it has to be dealt with a certain level or the highest level of responsibility. And we have to bear in mind that this concrete jungle that we live in and all the influences and all the obstacles that we may have come across in our earlier lives, and all of a sudden you're now in a very, very privileged position whereby you've got all these people just like, you know, whether they admit it or not, worshipping you, or it can get into your system. Not all. I'm fortunate to have some people that I represent that have done extraordinary stuff that have still got and themselves facing the right direction. But there has been a lot of people that I have had the misfortune of representing, and fame has got the better of them. You know, you know, the greed comes into play, the arrogance, the ego comes into play, and it's almost like you just see a child that's lost. And this is just bearing in mind the fact that they had lived a life, and all of a sudden they now feel as though they're being accepted. They now feel as though they're being loved. But the problem is they're looking for love in the wrong areas. And they're also forgetting where this came from, you know, and how quick it could be taken away from you. So it's been a gradual process for me. I mean, I've been agenting for over 20 years now. And it's so funny. There was a book that I read many, many, many moons ago that spoke about management of talent and knowing how you have to work in different stages with a client. So really, really quickly, stage one would be almost comparing it to a driving lesson. When you've got your student there for your first lesson, they are listening to every single word that you say. Look left, they look left. Look right, go straight, stop the car. They are so attentive. Then you go to stage two. Maybe they might have been in the commercial, all right? And they've got a bit of money. They come back into the car. Great. So look left. Okay, they take about 5 seconds to look left or whatever it is. And then it gets to that stage where they've gone on set. And they've worked with other actors and they've listened to other actors, and jealousy starts coming to play. They come back into the car and you say, look left. Well, I don't want to look left right now. Is it all right if we just wait a second? Okay, yeah, let's just wait. And then you find yourself having to adjust to the extent whereby they get to that place where they've been in these, been in a feature film or whatever it is. And their ego is so big, it's so massive, whatever it is. And you're the driving instructor still trying to guide them. And they're saying, don't tell me what to do. I know exactly where I'm going. And then you find yourself, if you are one of those agents that surrender to money, you go to the most lighter octave of your voice. And, you know, so before you be there as the instructor with full of authority, you know, but at that point there, you're like, okay, no problem. And then they smell that and they jump on that. So it's just so funny, the relationships that one can go through, you know, from being a manager and being an agent and the relationship with the client. But as I said, I've got some wonderful clients that I represent who've done some magnificent, you know, historical groundbreaking stuff, who have been wonderful, a real treat to work for. And that's because their principles and their faith beliefs are in the right place, and it's carried them through.
Which of these topics has not been covered on PremierChristianity.com? UFOs, near-death experiences, Doctor Who, Christ's return, the faith of celebrities, and Andrew Tate. Trick question. We don't shy away from any topic. We cover faith as it affects us in daily life and give you the bigger picture. PremierChristianity.com. Special podcast subscription offer at PremierChristianity.com/podcast.
That driving instructor analogy is a really interesting one. And you said something in passing a few moments ago where the analogy was almost as well that almost of a parent, like a kind of proud parent with the people who you get to work with. Do you ever find yourself, though, given that you, as you say, were doing some wonderful things yourself as an actor before you kind of moved into this new phase of your career, do you ever find yourself feeling almost a little bit jealous? Because these are you're the proud parent, but you think, yeah, but my son or my daughter has got this amazing acting gig and, you know, I'm not doing that anymore. Is there any part of you that misses it?
That's how I knew it was all about God, because had you asked me five seconds before God came into my life that way, I would have said there's absolutely no way I'm going to give fame to anybody else ahead of me. But what was funny is that I would often get the questions posed to me over the years. Family, what about you? Like, have you ever thought about going into it? And I'll say to them, well, no, I won't. The moment I go into it, my clients are going to be like, excuse me, what's going on here? But a bit of my head said, I wonder what it would have been like, though. And guess what happened? I got a call, a very bizarre call from Hollywood, who called me and said to me, we'd love you to be in this film with Reese Witherspoon called The Good Lie. And this is, bearing in mind, this is like 8 years after The Game. I'd not acted whatsoever. I left my agent. I was more committed to the drama school and what that was about, which is so weird to say right now. And I often said it out there. I said, listen, the only time I would ever even think about it, if Hollywood came knocking for me. And guess what they did? And guess what? I took the actual role. But then when I sat down in that trailer on that fake plastic leather kind of sofa they got there, and I looked through this like misty kind of like dated, window that you could just barely see what's going on outside because it hasn't been cleaned. And I looked over on a table and they had like a warm bottle of water that I'm expected to drink. And I had to reason with the fact that they called me, they picked me up at 3 o'clock in the morning, very well knowing that we're not going to film until 8 o'clock and I'm going to be stuck in this trailer. I just said to myself, that's the reason why. I don't want this. So I'm glad that God did give me the opportunity to go back there. Did I enjoy the acting? I did, but I didn't enjoy it anywhere close to representing talent. So I've just been fortunate enough to have that. It's an interesting one. It really is.
Yeah. And it's great to know that you're in the right place, right? It's great to know I'm doing what God has kind of called me to do. I was going to ask, like, how would you describe that calling? If I said, Femi, you know, what are you called to? What are you all about? What would you say?
What I'll say to you is that I have got another stage to my calling, which I will fulfill at one stage. And that is a different sort of partnership. You know, for me to be able to do God's job as his servant. And that's something that I know is going to happen, that there's a calling on my life and I have to answer it. The fact I often say that, you know, in life, the most perfect person is one who can acknowledge their imperfections. So the fact that I can right now know that, why aren't I answering his call right now? The fact that I can identify that, I hope that God sees that as somebody who recognizes his presence and the fact that I hear him. And I don't think I'm ready yet, but it's not about me thinking it. And it's so funny. I spoke to somebody on the phone today as I was driving. I can't even remember who it was this morning. And I said this very thing. I said that, but I know what God's going to do. Any moment, God's just going to say, Femi, you're taking too long, mate. Come, you're doing it now. So it can happen at any time, at any stage. And I don't think that's going to compromise what I do. And if it does compromise it, if it does end up taking my life in a whole fashion, then so be it. But, you know, I serve him above everybody else. You know, for all my misfailings and, you know, and everything that comes with it. He is my God. He's my savior. And he's the person I have to answer to above all the riches and all that comes with it.
And we can see some lovely hints of that on your social media pages, where occasionally you'll just set up a camera and you'll do 5 minutes on a thought that you know, or a Bible verse or something God's sort of been speaking to you about? Anything recently you're kind of living with that you feel like, yeah, God's really speaking to me about this, or this is a kind of a word that I'm living with?
No, I feel as though right now, I feel as though God's given me that space. And we've got to be very, very careful because, you know, a lot of us as human beings, and I feel as though I fall victim to this, creating our own designer gods, you know, whereby really and truly what we're saying is, this is what I want God to say. This is the kind of guidance that I want God to give me. So therefore, I'm going to place God's name on it and say that. And that's why I have to be very, very, very careful about that, because I feel as though I may do that once a week or twice a week or whatever it is. But it's just for me, my only way of trying to separate is by listening to that same purity that I heard when it came to creating that school. So right now, I do feel as though I'm in this space just to find myself and to accept the calling that has been put on me.
Yeah. So tell me a bit more about the school. I mean, I'd love to know what an average day looks like for you. I have a feeling there may not be any such thing as an average day, but, you know, tell me, what does work life look for you? What does running an acting school, a drama school, you know, what does that kind of mean for you day to day?
Running a drama school and also being a father and being a husband, it's quite something. But I often say that, you know, the one good thing about short guys is that we've got a lot of energy too. Do you know what I mean? To be able to fulfill so much, you know, that's probably the reason why I don't grow that much, because I burn so much energy. But it's pretty much just, you know, finding myself, you know, you come to the office. Over here, we're based over in the West End. So upstairs, we've got the head office for the school. Down here, we've got the agency. So we've got a team of about, 20 people that work here. And the actual school itself is based in Wood Green. So what normally happens is I go for morning briefings with the school, find out exactly what's going on, make sure that I have to sign off anything that needs to be signed off. I'm really, really hands-on with the school, more than students would expect. We often have laughs and think to ourselves that if only these students know how on it I am with that school, because that's my baby. I find it very, very hard to let go. So after we've done a morning briefing, then we've got a morning briefing with the agency where I'm pretty much permanently at. And so we liaise, you know, find out exactly who's gone up for what, looking through self-tapes, calling people about their auditions, speaking to producers, casting directors, directors and all alike. And it's just pretty much that. It's very creative. And then, you know, during the day, I'll go back up to the school and find out what's going on there. So it's got a very seamless, got a really, really nice engine that knows exactly how it's going. But it's a great space because we celebrate each other's voices and everything. And then what then happens in the evenings, that's when the school take place. So our school is in the evenings and it's also in the weekends. So then I'll probably go to the school, you know, twice a week to go pop in, see what's going on. But then the agents in the agency will go to the school at least once a term, you know, to go and see them do their showcases in the hope of finding out the next talent. So I hope that kind of fills it all into it. And in between, that's just me running around like a headless chicken. So, yeah.
Say, that sounds busy. It sounds busy, but a lot of fun as well. Yeah. I know you've spoken before about, you called it a massive shift, where, you know, at one point casting directors were just not considering black actors for certain roles, whereas now, you know, you've said the industry is actively courting people, and you even said diversity has even become a bit of a buzzword. Is that still the case? Is that how you've seen the change? And I guess you've had a front row seat to that change, and you've been able to be a part of that change, I guess.
Absolutely. It has been treated as such. You know, for us, as I've said many, many, many a times, is, you know, it's what and who we are. We are diversity. We are diverse, you know. It's about celebrating, you know, all the different shades and colours. And based on my own experience going to a drama school where I was one of only two people in that drama school, it was important for me to be able to give people that would often be overlooked an opportunity to be able to celebrate and to be able to learn and understand and grow in, you know, the wonderful cultures that they're born into this world from, you know. But the great thing is, and one thing I steadily realised, and I said it, is that by definition, you know, me being a black principal, you know, 50% of the student body will be black. You know, the same way, as I've often said, if, for example, you had an Asian principal, you know, it's because they can relate to it. It'd be 50%, whatever it is. But right at the beginning, 99% of the student body were black, which was a wonderful, beautiful thing. But I steadily realized the very, very thing that I was looking to create, that the very, very thing that we had was basically mirroring the pain of isolation that I experienced at drama school. And I steadily realized that we need to celebrate the world that we lived in. And that is, and that's what I'm proud to say at this school now, we have a wonderful diverse body of black, Middle Eastern, white, Asian, and everything in between, where they're all nourishing, elevating, pushing one another and educating one another, which is a wonderful, beautiful thing. And there's no place like it.
That's really interesting. So your experience at drama school when you were the only black person in drama school, is that right?
No, in my actual year, I was one of two.
So you almost realised that just as that was wrong and painful, you realised that actually if you just created a drama school that was 99% black, it's the mirror image of that, but it's still wrong and painful. And you've realised that actually for you, the way you fix this is diversity rather than just, you know, monoculture, whether it's monoculture white or monocultural black.
Absolutely. And I think I was doing a big massive disservice to the students too, because the fact is, how are you going to navigate this world you're in if you're not able to mix with other people, you know? And that's why I had to really take a step back and really think, okay, marketing wise, how am I going to be able to have a real universal school? And I started doing the homework, you know, and I started pushing it, and that's why we're at where we are now, which is wonderful.
Yeah, it's amazing. So I wanted to I wanted to ask you, you know, on that subject of diversity, because sometimes there is pushback, and sometimes people say, well, it's wrong what was before on TV, which was total lack of diversity. But sometimes you hear people say, well, has there been an overcorrection? Have we gone from underrepresentation of certain ethnicities, let's say black, that we've gone from underrepresentation to have we now got overrepresentation? Have we now got casting directors falling over themselves to appear a certain way or to, you know, push one type of skin colour that's actually now overrepresented? I imagine you've heard that kind of a criticism before. What's your response to that perception that some people have?
Yeah, you know, for me, it's like, because when we talk about, you know, so they can appear, my thing is not even placing any kind of like emphasis on the word appear, but the impact that it's having. Don't get me wrong. I had a reverse effect when I was watching loads of commercials. And I would often go, all right, great, so where's the black? There you go. There's another black person, whatever it is. And then it's, and for me, I just want to see, you know, real, natural, but also a representation of the world that we lived in. And some may question that, okay, maybe we've got so many people of colour on the screens that is becoming too much. But the problem is that their gauge on that is based on the fact that they've never, ever seen it before. And it's still taking some time to adjust. The same way when you look at the football matches, people are on their knees and everything like that. But I honestly think it's wonderful, because especially when you're reaching out to those regions, you know, those far regions in the UK, where I remember when I was young and my dad took us to Cornwall, and it's not like that now. And it almost felt like a scene out of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, you know, where all the kids hid from the child catcher or whatever it is. But all of these grown-ups and kids were looking outside their windows as we played frisbee on the grass. But for me, back in the day, it could be believed that, you know, a white person has never seen a black person before in the UK, right, in certain areas. Now, that's not the case. But the great thing is, it's really allowing people to accept and also to see other cultures for the human beings that they actually are, rather than feeding into the stereotypes, that I've been so often given.
Yeah, I think the great thing about this conversation, and it really comes through in talking to you and looking at some of the stuff you put out, is, you know, this conversation around diversity, it's not like it's in a separate box that's apart from our faith. It's actually intrinsically linked to who we are as Christians. And I was watching a video on the Identity School of Acting website where you're, and it's fascinating to me because you're not using Christian language, but I'm watching it as a Christian. I'm like, this has got God all over it, because you're saying to these young actors, you're saying, I want you to recognize how unique and special you are. And, you know, I've seen you in other contexts just talking about how, you know, God's created you for a reason. God's created us with care, and use this language of you need to own the gift that you are and the gift that you're bringing to the world. And you can see you're instilling that kind of confidence in these young people. But you and I know it's more than just some clever patter. Like, this is coming from a deep place of faith and believing that we're all created in the image of God.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's, you know, thanks for spotting that, you know. But it's all about, but that video that you saw was setting the precedence. That was their first inductions. So they know exactly what they're coming into. And it's so funny. I often have to say, as my little disclaimer, listen, I'm about to talk now, but you haven't entered into a cult or anything like that. There isn't anything that you need to look at, you know. You need to look at the fine print or whatever it is. But I often use the experience and example of, you know what, I found myself on this platform. I think it was in Tottenham Court Road many, many years ago. And this actual platform was made of different squares. That's, you know, tiles squares, whatever it was. And I was actually waiting for the train. And at that present moment, at that particular moment in time, I looked down and I saw that my feet, the tip of my feet was within the frame of that square and my heel was. And I said to myself, at that present moment, I said, wow, imagine that. 5'8" me. All right, I'm doing that because I'm actually 5'6", but, you know, you speak into existence and you might have, you know. Okay, 5'8" me, okay, right? Look what God has been able to invest in me, and look what I've been able to achieve. And all I take up in this big, massive, vast world is just this square tile. That's it, you know? And it's from that, that's where I try to feed everybody into knowing that, you know what, we are all gifts. You know, exactly what it says in the Bible that, you know, that God created us in our mother's womb. You know, he knitted us to absolute perfection. And it's only when we allow the concrete jungle or what this world represents to interfere with that, that's when we start to conjure up anxiety and jealousy and we start to draw comparisons to one another. When really and truly, the beauty, the flower is from within. And the more and more we invest in that, is the more and more God, it gives God that place to like shine his light. More and more and more and more and more. And that's why you can always see, because, you know, at times like you see somebody and you'd be like, yeah, that person's energy, I'm not really digging it. And you look at their face and you see that their energy is in their face. You know, it just sits there. But so, and this is what I'm nothing on people that age at all, you know, right? So, but it's one of those things that you have to invest and subscribe and truly believe in the gift that God has created. And once you can divorce yourself from what this world represents, you realize, okay, right, that you are far more powerful than what you think you know. And that's why when you have that joy, you can then look forward to, when it is your time, by the grace of God, old age or whatever it is, to go to that next phase of life, that you'll be one step closer to be able to hold in Jesus' hands, you know? And I've had some wonderful times and wonderful examples of, you know, when I felt Jesus' spirit appear, which you've heard many, many, many times from other people, or when I found myself on a Central Line train and I found that same voice say, Femi, in a minute, you're going to stand up, you're going to speak on this train. And I was like, oh my God, no, I'm not. And I felt almost like a vomiting kind of thing, like my intestines were twisting. And I eventually got up. And this was just a few months after the 9/11. And everybody's like, oh my God, what's going on now? You know? And I got up and I said, I didn't know what I was going to say. And I said, okay, sorry guys, I'm really sorry to disturb you, right? I'm not asking anybody for money. I don't know if this message is for you or it's for me, but God said that he loves you and he'll always be here for you. Thank you. That's it. And I went to the door and all I was doing was looking at that black, you know, black tunnel just going past and thinking, oh my God, hurry up, platform. And it wasn't even my blooming stop. Okay, right. And when those doors open, I run for it. And then somebody caught up and they said to me, did you know that today's National Prayer Day or whatever it was, which I found was quite fascinating. But that's what I want to get back. Because the problem with me, listening to God's voice, I became addicted to seeing almost like a spirit around me. So what I would do is, because when I was in America, I had this, something happen, and we could speak about it another day. But what happened was I was able to really, really feel God's presence I wasn't able to see him because he wouldn't allow my eyes to be open. But I felt his embrace. And people have asked me to often describe what it felt like. And I said, imagine you've lost a loved one and you've never ever, and you've basically been able to just manage to deal with it and navigate life, knowing that they've gone, but you just don't want to think about it too much. And imagine you see them for the very, very first time and they hug you and you're crying. I said it was that times a million. I said it was wow. So pure. So when I took it back to the UK, I would pray and I'll see all these like stars like glittering away. I don't know if it's my own, I was manifesting it, whatever it is. And I'll be shivering and feeling it. And at one point, God just took it away because he said, Femi, you're getting addicted to this now. You know? So anyway, that's me going off on one. I do apologize.
I think you should go off on one more often, Femi. It's fascinating. It's so interesting to hear all that God's using you for, and just a little bit of your story today. I'm gutted we're out of time because I've so enjoyed our conversation today, but I'm sure we'll get another chance. Femi Ogans, thank you very much for joining us this week on The Profile.
Thank you, Sam.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.